Hi, I'm Elaine. Welcome to my podcast channel.
Good morning, Petra, Miss Petra Menz. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, Elaine?
I'm great. It would be great if you can self-introduce a little bit about your field and your institution.
I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Mathematics at Simon Fraser University. What that means is that my main responsibilities are teaching and also leading some workshops. Those are essentially just math help centers, which means that I also have some administrative work to do and also some outreach. And the research that I do is mainly in math pedagogy, sort of action-driven research in terms of teaching and learning.
Oh, that is really interesting, because I've also heard that you did a lot of math or research in Germany. Could you tell us about the math curriculum in Germany as well?
Well, I grew up in Germany, and after high school, I went to Canada as a nanny, and then I got stuck and immigrated to Canada. So my experience is about the high school mathematics. So for that, I have to set the scene just a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in Germany, we have to take 14 subjects. And since I have worked as a high school teacher here, that contrasts sort of the 8 subjects that you would take here, or 7 to 8 subjects that you take here. And so my subjects that I had to study throughout high schools were German, English, French or Latin at the time. Now there are more language choices. Math, physics, chemistry, biology, history, geography, social science, sports, mm-hmm. arts, choir or music theory, and religion or ethics. And we had to have these subjects at all times. So 14 subjects at all times every week. And then in grades 11 through 13, we needed to pick 3 subjects to specialize in. And for me, these were English, math, and biology, all taught by specialized teachers, even university professors. This is a little bit unlike here in BC. And I know because I was a math teacher at a high school in Richmond for 6 years, where shortly after I started became department head. So in other words, was leading a team of teachers and of math teachers. And these teachers were comprised of a librarian, so no math background, a phys ed teacher, no math background, and a chemistry teacher, well, they have some math background, and one other math teacher, but just with a bachelor's of science. And it was also not specialized in mathematics, but it was a broad science degree. I was the only person that had a bachelor's of mathematics and computing science and a master's in mathematics, mm-hmm. and a bachelor's of education in mathematics. And so, so that's important, right? Because the person that's transmitting the knowledge had a very, very deep and also broad subject knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then in grade 13, we had the option of boosting our GPA by basically writing a mini thesis in any one of our specialized subjects. And I chose to do this in math. And my topic was Taylor polynomials and Taylor series. Mm-hmm. Maybe, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I did some of that in my AP talk.
Okay, yeah, excellent. This is a place where you probably would see some of it.
Yeah.
So my gains from this experience were huge, and that's why I wanted to share it. So first of all, I had to plow through books on my own. Yes, I had a supervisor that I would have regular meetings with. The supervisor was my math teacher and then a physics teacher. But since I also had to have, so the condition for this was that I needed to have a textbook in a different language. And I could only choose from the library that was there present in my high school. And it had to be a language that I hadn't encountered before. And so I chose a Russian textbook among the English and German texts that I had also chosen to study. And the task was to stay in the realm of these texts. We didn't have Google back then, okay? We have to set the scene for that too. And what I came away with was that math, the math language is pervasive through the Western world and a language of its own, meaning I can actually read it. No matter what language it's in. Yes, there's a little bit of a struggle, you know, to read the in-between, but the math language itself stands out. You can read it. Mm-hmm. And this was tremendously helpful for me when I remember I immigrated to Canada. And after being a nanny for 2 years, I went to the University of Toronto to study for my Bachelor's of Science. And so I was already a bit fluent in English, but also I wasn't so afraid to study mathematics. And then the third thing is that we in Germany, we also cover way more math specific or even in other subjects specific material. So by grade 13, I had already studied statistics and probability, like the proper stuff that gets studied at the university, differential calculus, integral calculus, a little bit of vector calculus. So we went into 3D and also linear algebra. So in other words, the first 2 years of university mathematics, I had already covered in Germany. Now, did I have like a deep understanding and knowledge? Probably not, but I'd seen it and I was proficient in it, right? So that all helped for me to pave my way into mathematics right here.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so one more thing I wanted to say about this, with the specializing of these three subjects that you do in Germany in high school, is that you get double the contact. Class sizes are very small, 10 to 20. And in all three of my subjects, English, math, and biology, we had a lot of teacher contact. And we would learn by reading the text together. We would be discussing it. We would individually had to work on the blackboard. Back then we had blackboards. And so it was very active. You couldn't hide. Mm-hmm. You were drawn into it.
Wow. That sounds really interesting. I think through your description of your vast experience of the German curriculum in general, I think a lot of people would want to go to Germany too. I think it's really interesting. Yeah. So let's move on to the following questions. What ways of math teaching method did you incorporate in your high school teaching or university teaching to simplify complex concepts to make it like more simple?
So what I noticed, first of all, is personally, I'm a very visual learner. Mm-hmm. And because of language, so in other words, not being as proficient in language back then as perhaps I am now, and I'm still learning, I emphasized visual mathematics a lot. Mm-hmm. And also because of my experience in mathematics in high school, where my teachers, and I had a variety of different ones, also used a lot of visuals and a lot of drawing in the moment as it unfolded and as it happened. So we didn't learn so much by somebody slamming on example and then us repeating it all the time. It was doing real mathematics together. And so I very much tried to use lots of visuals, lots of manipulatives. And this was also sort of the rise of technology that became available to us. And applets became, you were able to produce applets, you were able to grab applets from the internet. So in, those are things where you, that are maybe not interactive, but they unfold in front of you. For example, as simple as in trigonometry, where you have, when you want to study the sine and the cosine and a tangent, and you have a unit circle, and then you have a radius that's traveling through around the center, and then it drags the right triangle that you need for the sine and the cosine and the tangent with it, right? And then you can see it visually in front of you, what's happening, how the ratios change between the legs of the right triangle, but the hypotenuse stays the same. And that's basically trigonometry. And so there was that. And then because of my strong mathematical background and also being really kind of attached to academic learning, okay, I'm not going to disguise that, I love this environment. And because I was the specialist in the in my high school, so I was teaching mostly grade 12 students. So those are the ones that are going to embark very soon into post-secondary institutions or colleges or whatever they're planning to do. And I was teaching AP calculus, both the AB and the BC strands. And so to facilitate a more social environment as I experienced it in Germany, I instituted at my high school a weekly math club during lunchtime. And initially, it was really just students from my courses that came, but I think about 2 months in or so, if my memory is correct, other students started joining. So it really became a social circle. And what is it that I did there? Well, yes, of course, I did math problems. So I posted, so I was driving heavily the problem-solving idea. And that for that, I have to come back to my experience with this mini thesis, which is also something that I have picked up throughout my university teaching as well. I strongly believe, and research shows this as well, we're not born with like math inside my brain. We learn it. Everybody can learn it. And what makes some people learn things better than others? Well, it's our behavior, our intellectual behavior towards subjects. So in other words, things like, are we flexible? Do we persevere? Do we strive for precision? Do we question problems? Do we gather experiences? So these become our past experiences, our knowledge. And do we not shy away from applying this knowledge to new experiences, like to new situations, I should say, so that we can create new knowledge out of the struggle that we have with new problems. Because struggle is good. Struggle means that we're actively trying to learn something.
Yeah.
And I have later on learned that these are actually called habits of mind. And they are a key behavior, if you look at any intellectual or intelligent person, I should say, not intellectual, that's the incorrect word. So anywhere, I don't have to go to university, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And these are also transferable skills, meaning that if you have them, then you can pretty much do anything with them. And so in my math clubs, in my teachings, I strive for this. And that means I give my students scaffolded problem solving, but I also give them sort of loose puzzles that they can manipulate with their hands. I have a collection of about 40 different puzzles that I've collected from all over the world, and you manipulate them with your hands. Some of these mean that something is locked and you need to know how to unlock it. Some of these are like a map problem and you have to slide around things so they line up. And then tons of games. The games are so good because they provide you with a social setting, but you have to employ strategy. You kind of have to plan when you play. You have to assess all the time. You have to execute your plan. You have to reflect and go, something went wrong. Maybe I can do something better. And hey, those are the four key steps that we know from George Polya, the famous Polish mathematician that gave us these four steps of problem solving, like as a process of understanding, making a plan, following a plan, checking, reflecting back, right? And I brought in guest speakers from both UBC, right? I had recently graduated, I had strong contacts, and also from SFU, because some of my graduated colleagues, they went to SFU and did a postdoc perhaps there or got employed there. So I was already foreshadowing mathematics at university for my students. And then I went on field trips with them to Science World and Astronomy Museum. Okay, so that's what I did in these math clubs. And in class itself, I really couldn't stand this sort of behavior that I saw, whereas homework in math was done inside the classroom. It's called homework, right? Home. It means that you should be studying it on your own. At home, right? So Elaine, I know a little bit about you, and you very much do that as well, right? Sort of this individual study.
Yeah, do a lot of math myself.
Yeah, and then within the classroom, I very, because that's the way I learned it as well, did a scaffolded learning. This basically is a systematic approach to learning new skills that incorporate also what the student's knowledge is. So I would have to figure out what the knowledge base is. Yeah, this means a bit of testing, conversations, working on problems to discern where they're at. And then you build on from there. And like I said, visuals, manipulatives, bringing interactive stuff in. And then I also had students work on the blackboard, on the whiteboard, in groups, individually. And I also had them present mathematics. Why is that important? Because you have to speak. You have to speak the math. And you can't just learn math by doing it on paper. You have to talk about it. You have to use its language. You have to struggle with it. You have to grope for these words that are correct, that are right. And you start also building a sort of a mental image around it, right? You have to explain and you have to convince others. You have to have the right argument. And then I also, I didn't really like the math textbooks a lot. You may find my name in some of them, actually, in some of the high school math textbooks, because I worked for the ministry and I was involved in curricular development or the guidelines, what it's called right now. But anybody can go to the to the ministry website and you can see exactly what's demanded that teachers have to learn, right? I was part of that development back then. And then publishing companies would spring off from that, and then they would publish texts that are just really tied very statically to that. And back then I got caught up in it as well. But I already developed a lot of my own handouts, the way I saw mathematics. And I really, really enjoy creating this kind of mathematical material. And it stuck with me then when I became a university lecturer, when I worked at the University of New Brunswick. That was my first lectureship. And then when I moved to Vancouver, then also at Simon Fraser University, where I would develop mathematics, mathematical texts, basically. Okay, yeah, so they're texts too. But in these texts, I very much try to drive sort of visualization. And also now that we can do it interactive material. So that's what I've done at my current institution.
Well, yeah, that is really helpful. I would say that so many textbooks and your teaching style and learning math styles would help a lot of different students out there. So since you're a teacher at SFU, it would be great if you could share your daily schedule. What is your daily schedule like at the university?
What's my day? Well, currently I'm on study leave, so that's a little bit of a different schedule, but maybe I'll juxtaposition both of them. If I'm not on study leave and a and I work full time as a lecturer, then I would have to teach basically 6 courses in a year. Now, at our institution, this is because we are a tri-semester university, a proper tri-semester university. This could mean that in the fall semester and in the spring semester and the summer semester, I would each teach 2 courses, which I, of course I can shuffle around the way I see fit. And so I would be teaching 2 courses. Mm-hmm. And then that means in terms of my involvement with it, for example, currently I am very much enjoying teaching a math course that is, it's a math content course for students who want to become elementary teachers. Yeah. And also I very much enjoy teaching calculus for the social sciences. So that means the calculus that has a financial slant to it for the business and economy students. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe in this strong teacher contact. So by our contract, I guess if that's what you want to call it, we only need to give 1 contact hour per week to per class to our students. But I give, for my calculus courses, I give 3 contact hours per week. And for my math for teachers, I give 4 contact hours per week. And then I have a very, very well-developed Canvas container. That's our management system online for the course. It has lightboard videos on it, and then it has lots of discussion boards on it. And then it also has, because I firmly believe in group work, my students are all clustered into groups of 4 maximum. And if the numbers don't work out, I have a couple of groups of 3. Mm-hmm. And they are active on their boards. And I would be, my time is also spent in going through all of these boards and providing feedback to students and guiding them, going to the class discussion boards and also guiding them as well in the mathematics. Mostly this means questions, but I also encourage that students respond to students so that it's not just me driving everything, but we all learn from each other.
Yeah, I think that's a really great design as well. Regarding to the SFU math program, what do you think is the most interesting about SFU's program? Because maybe there might be other people who are thinking to apply to SFU for undergrad or graduate studies. So do you have anything to say about that?
So what most people probably don't realize is that SFU has a very, very strong math department. Mm-hmm. Very strong. In fact, all of the STEM departments are very strong. We have very well-known mathematicians working in our department. There really are magnets for the students. And not just for the graduate students, but also for the undergraduate students. So we have several different specializations, from pure mathematics to applied mathematics, fluid dynamics, studying, I don't know, the flow of maple sap in trees. And that means, you know, you also need to learn tree physiology and biology, or studying how, about any kind of fluid behaves, like a smokestack, how industries release their chemicals into the air, or how much chemical content would there be in it, how would it be driving through a certain valley. So this math also leans to environmental science, so fluid dynamics kind of studies. Then there's optimization studies that exist, and then of course right now we with Caroline Colgian, we also have a top-notch mathematical epidermologist who has just created her own institution within our Department of Mathematics, where they study and she attracts students. And then And many more. And undergraduate students, if they're interested, can get one of these USRAs. These are undergraduate studies research assistantships. So it's basically money that comes from NSERC. That's an organization where everybody in the sciences gets their research funding from. And then in addition, the supervisor also puts in a little bit of money. And so this means, roughly speaking, I don't know, $8,000 to $9,000 that you can earn in a summer, mm-hmm. where you would be studying under supervision a topic that a supervisor has set out. However, so we currently are in the process again, so this cycles through the years. A call is made out to all of the professors, and then they're, it's like the mini thesis that I've done in my high school. They set out certain topics and what they're looking for skills, sometimes some refined skills. They're looking for students that have studied quite a bit of math, but sometimes not so refined, maybe just have done the first year of calculus. Mm-hmm. And so they set out these problems, they get collected, they go into a database, students, undergraduate students look there. However, undergraduate students that are very interested in something can also approach professors and then say, hey, I'm really interested in studying with you, or interested in studying that. And then they have a conversation, and then the supervisor or the prof is not a, he or she is not a supervisor yet, right? Mm-hmm. They would then define a problem that would be catered to the undergraduate students. So I've seen that quite a bit as well. And then they get real experience of what it's like to be a researcher, not just in an environment, in an academic environment, but also something that they can take away into the industry as well, right? It's independence, it's all of these habits of mind that are being developed here as well, or drawn on, and they earn some good money as well, right? So that's available. And that's of course available at any university. But I would claim that at Simon Fraser University, we really, really try mm-hmm. to connect with our undergraduate students. They're, even myself as a lecturer, I pick undergraduate students. I say, hey, would you be interested in this? Or would you be interested in that? Would you like to help out mm-hmm. in our math help centers? And then build from there, right, to make connections with them.
Oh, yeah, it sounds really interesting. I think through your description of the SFU math program, because I know it's really strong as well. And it seems like there's a lot of teacher to student interaction and as well. And there's so many diverse fields of study also provided at that university. So I think that a lot of high school students would want to join that institution too. So
yeah. Come on up to SFU.
Yeah, I would love to drop by and visit you sometime. Yeah, but thank you so much for answering my podcast questions.
You're very welcome, Elaine. Thank you.